Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, we're back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 575. NASDAQ Futures up 21. We were up a little bit more last night, and we went back to flat. Now we're kind of bumping along here. We have the talks going on in London between the U.S. and China for a deal. You know, we're going to have all these deals, and we'll see what we get. As of now, I don't know if we've got too much of anything, but we have hope here. So, plus, we have the Fed pouring money into their system, so the trend of market is definitely up. We'll see if it stays that way. I think it'll stay that way for a little bit. See what the interest rates do. See what the CPI is tomorrow. See what they do with that one. Do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you do.
How are you, bud?
Hey, man, it's riot season.
Yeah, well, you know, what did Sean Connery say? A little revolution every now and then is a good thing?
Well, okay, so, you know, since you brought up that word, which, by the way, I commend you for that because you're one of the few people that's used it.
Oh, we're getting there.
Well, here's the thing. So protest, you know, First Amendment is something that we respect in this country, right? Free speech, all of that good stuff. However, the minute that you commit arson, you throw bricks, you destroy people's property, whether it's, you know, unless it's yours and you're doing it in a safe manner. I mean, you know, people complain all the time about, you know, about folks choosing to burn the American flag. Well, okay, you may find that abhorrent and disgusting. However, as long as it's your flag and you do it in a safe fashion, you know, you're not using it to light someone's car on fire, for example.
Yeah.
You may not like it, but the Supreme Court has ruled that that is protected speech. And I agree with it, even though I think it's a disgusting display and probably ought not be done. But, you know, using the F word is also something that probably should not be done in polite company, but there are times that it's appropriate. Okay, it's fine. The rest, however, especially if you are committing violence while you are waving another country's flag, which is happening, is a declaration that you are engaged in a revolution.
Well, we have a long period of unfortunate. You know what? I just watched a Star Trek episode where a group of people, this is the Next Generation, where a group of people on some planet were revolting against people that had essentially subjugated them.
Yeah.
And now, on one person's side, of course, if you're the subjugators, everything was fine. But on the other side,
of course, it
didn't feel so fine.
Right.
So the explanation, or the argument was between, the discussion was between Captain Picard and Data. Data, the android was always trying to learn.
Yes.
And he was saying, oh, through the centuries, civil disobedience or, you know, worse than that, to get people's attention on a subject, if it's a legitimate subject, has been fairly effective. And Picard says, you know, Picard was talking about it has been effective, but it's also not the way to get things done, which I agree with you. The fact is, other people don't listen.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you look at this through our history, I mean, I was in Chicago during the 68 riots and all kinds of things. The fact is, the people doing the rioting had a point, and nobody... Anybody thinks that our system here if you just like write letters to your congressman and do the right thing, they think that it works. I'm not, as you can probably tell, Carl and I can, we're terrific in the sense that we can both agree on a subject, yet come at it from different directions, which causes us to almost argue. somewhere along the line, and I don't agree, what you just said, Carl, I'm absolutely with. But there are a lot of people, and by the way, I'm one of them. I'm a serious supporter of Israel, always has been. I think that this, what they've done in Gaza, and I think that's deplorable. Yep. The fact, the amount of people that are dead, and they don't seem to care. And I find it horrendous. Now, am I blowing up somebody's car? No, but I also know writing a letter to Trump or Biden is not going to get me anywhere.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, I'm not saying that there isn't, that the people on the other side of this debate don't have a point in their actions, because they do. Okay? However, when you put the marker on the table, you take the consequences.
I don't disagree. But look at the people in Chicago that don't seem to care about anybody but themselves.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden some legitimate group, or whoever it happens to be, walks up and down Michigan Avenue, they hate him because it caused them to go around the block. Instead of trying to say, okay, what are these people thinking about? Does it make any sense? Why aren't they getting heard normally? Oh, man, that ass made me drive around the block. I hate him. I mean, we're so in love with ourselves these days. Do we even know what people are talking about?
Well, no. there's a difference between, a permitted demonstration that, we're going to march down Michigan Avenue, okay, and a bunch of rioters setting cars on fire in the middle of Michigan Avenue.
Democratic Convention was here, people went for the permits near where the convention was.
And they were told no.
They were given permits, 3 miles away, where nobody at the convention would even possibly see them. Okay, well, that's fine, I guess. But I mean, there's a million sides to this story, Carl.
I am not saying, and I never have, that there is not a time that you tell the government to go stick it in its where, and do it anyway. Okay, because there are times where you do that, and that's what it is. But then you cannot bitch when, having done that, and in the process you've committed felony offenses, that the hammer comes down on you.
Well, I was thinking of you on Sunday. Now you wonder, why the hell is this guy thinking of me? I was actually went for a walk. In Orland, where Audrey lives, and with my little dog, and she's trying to take on every other dog, even though she's 19 and has one tooth, but she doesn't seem to get that. When kid says to me, "Why are you walking such a small dog?" I said, "Well, she doesn't think she's small; she thinks she's huge. She looks in the mirror and sees a lion." Anyway, there's these people that are doing some remodeling. And I forget the address if ICE is listening. And there's this Hispanic family, moving junk out. They pull up carpets or something. And the interesting part is the entire family's there. So I'm talking to the lady, and she goes, these kids aren't going to sit on the sofa and then play with their phones while we go work. He goes, that's not going to happen.
So, right.
The father, who's older, she says, he's here because we got to give him something to do. He just lost his wife. Okay, fine. So they're doing all this work. And I talked to the owner of the place for a second. He goes, yeah, these are great people, blah, 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 blah. If you want to get a dumpster, it costs you $3,000 or something. I didn't know that. But
yeah.
And the tip of my tongue was, do you realize, and this guy's I'm assuming he's a MAGA dude, but I'm not sure. Do you have any idea that probably everybody here is not a citizen? I didn't say this. And, by the way, if they aren't, and you hire them, by the stroke of some law, you could be 10 years. I didn't say that, but does anybody have any idea? Is everything that is being done, not only by this administration but by others, does anybody have an idea how it could affect them? Or is this, you know, everybody likes it when the Gestapo pinches your neighbor, but when it rings on your doorbell, it's a problem.
Well, it really sucks when it's your guy.
Yeah,
right?
When it's your guys.
Right.
Anyway, because it ties in a little bit, you know, Carl, you know, you hang with me, and thank you for that, when I go from subject to subject, but this morning I'm reading about the Obamacare cuts, evidently, in this you know, great, beautiful bill.
Oh, well, I'll tell you where the real murder is.
Well, wait, hang with me for a second. Is that somehow or other, somebody's, how they did this poll, I have no idea, and whether it's accurate, who the hell knows. They claim that 45% of the people who it's going to affect are Republicans.
Yeah.
Mostly, these people even know, does anybody wake up and smell a coffee here, for God's sake? Or it could just as easily be you?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think is kind of interesting about this is that there's a real problem in this particular thing. This is now the one of the big issues that comes up with this, and I have a really serious issue with what's happened here. I mean, this is what drove me out of doing any kind of entrepreneurship, you know, for the last 10 years, okay? And it was precisely this. It was the fact that this phase-out that's in the original law, and the Democrats and Obama, when they wrote this, they did this on purpose. Okay, they did this deliberately to screw small business. And they're, you know, now
Carl,
whether or not...
The universal song for the last 32 years, for the 16 years both groups have been in power, has been to talk about middle class, but to screw small business. It's all they've done for 30-some years.
Absolutely. And it's absolutely deliberate.
And it's both parties.
But I'm not arguing it isn't, okay? But this is a really big deal, and nobody wants to deal with it. Right? Absolutely no one. But this is not a minor little thing by any stretch of the imagination. And the people who think it is, you've got rocks in your head. It is not. It has done tremendous damage from that standpoint. And so, you know, here we are, and during the COVID thing, part of I don't remember which one it was. I think it was the rescue plan. I don't think it was the Inflation Production Act. It was the other one. I think it was the other one that originally did it. I'd have to go back and look at exactly which one it is. But they modified the rule. So the way it used to work was that when you got to, I think it was two or three times the federal poverty line for whatever your family size is. So for most entrepreneurs, you might be married, maybe you got a kid or two, or you could be a single person. If you're young, there's pretty decent odds you're a single person, right? So basically, the bottom line is that the phase out started at the federal poverty line, and then by the time you got to two or three times the federal poverty line, the subsidy was completely gone, and you had to pay it. If you'd taken it originally, you had to pay it all back come April 15th. Okay, which by the way is not a small amount of money. I mean, if you're talking about $1,000 a month, all of a sudden you owe the IRS 12 grand, right? Like right now. Right. That is a murderous effective tax rate on those funds. It's insane, and it is ridiculously destructive to small business and entrepreneurship.
Well, if you take it one step further, Carl, and I'm agreeing with you, what else has happened, and that's why, you know, I try not to act so pissed off, but I guess I am, and so are you. That's why we do this. If you drop... And you know, what got this in my blood Carl, was doing tax returns for people back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I realized what inflation had done to people. Inflation is the best thing in the world for the government. If you go back, now you know these numbers better than me, so feel free to interrupt, which I hope you do anyway. If you were making 40 grand, maybe 7-8 years ago, when all this stuff happened, Obama, what the barrier was like 50, right? So you're getting help from Obamacare, and not only that, the marginal tax rate jumps pretty dramatically between 40 and 50, correct?
Yes, it does.
So if you're lucky enough over the last 5 or 6 years, where most of us think the inflation has, you know, been 35 to 40 to 42%, anybody with a brain cell working would think that, I think. If you essentially were lucky enough to get 2/3 of that, or say get all of it, and you were if you were lucky enough to get the 40% raise, you're now making what, 56, right?
And you just got boned.
You just got absolutely boned, because not only are you are paying more, the tax is like now what, 22% instead of 12 or something like that,
right?
On the remaining amount, you now, once you jump over that 50 number, you might as well bend over and get out in traffic. I mean,
yeah,
because all of a sudden now you don't get any of this stuff from Obamacare or anybody, and you're not getting any government help whatsoever. So that 15 grand just cost you more than you ever dreamed it could.
Well, that's when that started. That's what drove me out of entrepreneurship. Okay, now, you know, love him or hate him, one of the things that was in that COVID-related bill was a modification of this that up it, and it still phases out, but it now is a percentage base, and I think it's, what is it, 4% of AGI. What you have to fork up for an Obamacare plan is capped as a percentage of your AGI.
Right.
Okay. Now it's actually,
but the plans are absolutely horseshit.
Well,
if you get the bronze plan, what's your deductible? Seven, eight grand for somebody who doesn't have any money? I mean, what's the point of that?
Yeah, no, well, Chief, that's what I do, okay? And the only reason is because I have zero interest in 99% of any involvement with anything with the medical system, because I have seen enough of the corruption that I'm convinced that short of being shot in a car accident or something of that general nature, they're probably going to screw me instead of solve whatever the problem is.
Well, if you...
All right. And by the way...
I think you're a little strong with that, but...
No, I don't think so. And it is to their advantage to create a chronic condition making me dependent upon them. And not only that, what's even worse is if I go into a hospital and they give me an infection, they get to bill me for it.
Oh, yeah. Okay? Well, don't kill everybody, because if
no, Chief. All I'm pointing out is that a system that has as one of its features that, you know, it's the same thing as a roofer that you call because you got a leak in your roof, okay?
Yeah.
And you need to fix that because otherwise your house is going to get totally screwed, right? And he comes out and he's got a big ass ladder to get up on your roof, duh. And after it. When he gets down, he drops it, and it goes straight through your picture window. And then he gets to bill you for the picture window.
Yeah, well, it's...
Because he's a clumsy ass.
By the way, I'm with you 100% on where the hospitals are going, but I also... I mean, maybe because I'm lucky or maybe because I know people, I have a terrific eye doctor. I just pay when I go for my exam every 2 years. I got a terrific dentist. I just pay. I go to the chiropractor. He charges me $50. I mean, you can find people that you can pay, and it's reasonable. It's not the same what you're talking about. We have a $500,000 cancer surgery, and you die 2 months later. Oops, sorry.
It's, you know, look, I get it that there's, you know, but I mean, why carry it all? Well, because I could get run over by, you know, some jackass that's driving with no insurance and no license, right?
I don't want my family to get the bill. Neither do you. I mean,
the thing is that can happen, right? And if it does, I can't sue because the person that did it to me has no money.
Or it could just be bad luck. I mean, I could literally be hit by lightning going out to get my, you know, go get my mail this afternoon. Now, it's not likely, but it could happen.
Sure.
I could get cancer, okay? And maybe, unlike most of these things, which I don't think are actually solvable, the data says that we've spent stupid money and the results have been like 4 months worth of additional life.
Yeah.
All right? And at what quality? None.
Well, remember the drug Avastin?
But here's the thing, Chief. Maybe not, because sometimes they can take a knife and cut it out and life goes on, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that does happen. So, but if it happens and you have no coverage, you're going to get a $500,000 bill up your backside. All right.
Now, what is, by the way, I don't know this. I should. If you are, you know, an Obamacare person, all of a sudden you fall off. Or if you're Medicaid and all of a sudden there's no Medicaid,
right?
Something's wrong with you. If you show up at county, somebody still has to take care of you, right? I mean, if you're bleeding, so they sure do. If you have cancer, maybe they don't. I don't know. I mean, that's why.
No,
I'm asking.
There's a law called EMTALA that Reagan passed, and it was due to a couple of. It was literally a handful of people that, you know, had gotten shot, for example, right? They had no money. And they're not dead right now, but they're going to be if somebody doesn't take care of this. And hospitals dumped them because they had no ability to pay.
Or they don't take that insurance or something, yeah.
Well, whatever the specifics were, they dumped them. And as a result, Congress passed a law that says if in an emergent situation such as that, you have to treat them, screw whether they have any money, right? Now, the problem with this is that's what they did. And by the way, you can't actually force somebody to do that. But what you can do is you can say, if you refuse, then you are not able to take any federally funded health care. All right. Well, no hospital's going to do that because that means no Medicare, no Medicaid.
I think they end up triaging them a little bit and sending them to county or something.
Well, that's essentially what you have to stabilize the condition. You don't have to treat everything, but you have to stabilize the circumstances. But the problem with this is they didn't do this the way that I've advocated for 25 years, which is that if you find yourself in that situation, the hospital has to treat you. It's at Medicare rates, okay, because they don't get to charge you the rack rate, all right? It's at Medicare rates, and they submit the bill to the U.S. Treasury, which immediately pays it, and it becomes a tax lien. Now, if you manage to get all the way through life and are never able to pay, okay, with your accrued interest, well, then the taxpayer is going to eat it. That's the way it goes. Life's tough sometimes, but 90% of the time, that's not going to be the circumstance. And the other thing is, you change this so it only applies to American citizens or lawful permanent residents. Because if you have this kind of a thing happen to you in any other country in the world, anywhere else, you're not going to get treated if you can't.
But we don't want to be like them, do we?
I want to be like them in that regard because I want the magnet problem off the table. And the only way you can do it is that. Okay? So if you want
to let them die.
If they come here legally, it's not a problem.
I get it. If they're dead, you're not a problem.
Chief, if they come here legally, that's fine. But if not, sorry, you want to come into the United States.
Do you leave the body on the driveway or do you take that somewhere?
You know what? We can pay for the cremation.
Okay.
That's $600. We can do that.
I read this thing, and we talked about it, God, a long time ago, Carl. There was a Tribune or somebody had a list of the costs of somebody getting shot and showing up at, you know, North, whatever,
yeah,
Christ or county or someplace.
Oh, God.
And it was a whole list. I mean, you had to, average is like, you know, 5 x-rays to find out where the bullet is. You know, God knows how much per x-ray. And then there is this test, that test, this test, the surgery. It's up to, you know, I don't know what it was, 70, 100, 125 grand in the first hour you're there.
Right.
And I'm sitting there going, okay, every single one of these people is on staff. The machine is there. There's somebody being paid, sitting there doing nothing, waiting for somebody to show up and get an x-ray. I'm not saying it's zero. I get that part, but this idea of this incremental costing, on a cost accounting basis, the cost of the guy coming to the door might be a grand, you know, for the sutures or something. But and they're saying it's 100 grand. Well, they're going to take a percentage of the overhead of the guy who runs the place, too, and they're going to... On a full costing thing, I understand that. Somebody's got to pay it someplace. But I also... I mean, nothing that those people do that are on salary in 2 hours is worth 200 grand. I'm sorry.
And yet, Chief, this is the way that we... Well, this is, this is what we do, right?
We also got to... What we do is we got to go to break, but... Just remember, is what did Hemingway say? You know, ask not for who the bell tolls; it tolls for thee. grace of God is going to be you someday if you don't.
Let me point one thing out here: those people who think that this immigration thing and all the stuff that's going on in the various cities right now is a wedge issue anymore. It ain't. It is now an 80-20 issue, and I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. If we don't put a stop to this...
It's an 80-20 issue, Carl, because somebody has made it a bigger issue than it is.
Well, you know what?
In Germany, you never knew that the Jewish doctor you went to once a month was your enemy. And oh, by the way, he had to be killed. And we had to take all his stuff. We never knew that, did we, until somebody told us that.
Well... You know, it's welcome to the media that told us we were losing the Tet Offensive.
I'm stunned about how much. By the way, you know that you can't find a bigger agreeer than me. To have a wild open border is kind of nuts. But I also know that there have been people in this country. We are very reluctant to give citizenship to people that have been here for a long time. And like are paying taxes and have a regular job. And by the way, we don't give citizenship to everybody who's saved from the Army, which I never understood.
Well, Chief, I helped a young woman go through her taxes to make sure that she was not going to get bounced on the final review. That she came here legally with her parents as a kid, okay, and had a green card. Well, but when you go for that final hearing, if you cannot prove that you have paid all of your taxes, you can get bounced right there.
They got a lot of people here. They could bounce half the corporations, for God's sake.
Well, I'm just saying. And so I went through all of her stuff with her. I mean, I'm not a CPA, but I filed my own taxes and I've run a business. I know how to do it. And I went through everything, and I told her, I said, Nicolette, I'll be more than happy to sit down with you. You know, take an evening, we'll have a couple beers and, you know, go through all this stuff. And did, because God forbid you go into that hearing and they find something. You can lose all of the effort you've put in all the way up to that point. It can be gone in a flash.
Well, this conservative dude that I was walking by his house and started talking to people, which imagine me doing that, when I said, boy, oh boy, don't you understand that they're your enemies? He goes, what do you mean? I go, they're your enemies. They're not legal. What do you mean? They're citizenship. I said, how much you got? I'll take the under on that.
Yeah.
You know, I said, and by the way, you're liable for 10 years. He looked at me like I had four heads. What is everybody, when four people have these opinions, should they at least educate themselves a little bit about what they're doing?
Chief, we don't do that anymore.
We don't do that anymore. But now, SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 23. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jacks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjacks.net. That's matt@stocksandjacks.net.
Stocks and jocks. Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Carl. Time out. Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 6. NASDAQ Futures up 25. The direction appears to be up here. I mean, like I said, we've been talking about money supply increases worldwide, which really should be positive for the markets. I mean, not positive for the value of the currency in your pocket, but it should be positive for the market, barring something else, which doesn't mean, you know, run out and buy calls today. I'm not just saying that. I'm just saying it generally is until something bad happens, and something bad hasn't happened unless we get like some really bad CPI numbers tomorrow or something, which I don't think we will. DAX down 88.4%, FTSE up 36.4%. A CAC around down 4, call that flat. So let's just say Europe is flat this morning. And Asia, which was up huge yesterday, up again today. Nikkei up 122.3%. Hang Seng down 18. Call that flat. Yesterday had a big move up. Shanghai down 14.4%. They were up yesterday, but that's a little significant on the way down for those guys. Not that bad, though. Bonds down 3 basis points, 4.45. 10-year keeps looking like it's going to go through this 4.5 and it can't stay through there. Same way with the 30-year. Looks like it's going to make it through 4-5% and it never does. So whether the Fed is a buyer there or not, I don't know, or we're just not going to go that high. We'll see. Oil up 31 cents, 65.60. That's been a pretty good run-up in oil from the 61 level to 65 in the last week and a half. It's probably been as good a move as it's had. It's now at the upper end of this range. We'll see if it breaks through. Brent up 31 cents, 67.35. Natural gas down 3 cents, 3.59. RBOB unchanged at 2.10. Gold, which has been, pretty much on a tear, but another 5.70, 33.60. Silver up 11 cents, 33.91. It's been the biggest mover the last couple of weeks. After lagging gold, now it seems to be outpacing it a little bit. Copper down 3 cents, 4.89. Foreign exchange, the dollar has been weak. The euro is 114.26, and the pound is one just a little under 135, 134.99. Crypto, Bitcoin's up $1,100, 109.783, so the fake stocks are doing well. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 57 degrees right now with a high of 77. Hazy sun, smoke from wildfires in Canada still coming down hot. Might reduce air quality today, so watch out for that. So now we'll be clear with a low of 64 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 84 degrees right now with a high of 107. How with plenty of sun, danger of heat stroke if outside for too long. Tonight will be clear with a low of 80 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's is 29 minutes. We're looking at about 44 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 32 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 15 minutes. And lastly, Iman Stevenson from 294th to Dan Ryan, 35 minutes. Panthers take the lead yesterday with a score of 6-1 against the Oilers. Series is now 2-1, and game 4 is this Thursday, June 12th at 7 p.m. in Florida. As of today, NBA Finals is tied 1-1. Game 3 is this Wednesday, June 11th, and that's Thunder at Pacers, at 7:30 p.m. Lastly, MLB. Cubs lose to Phillies yesterday 3-4, and Diamondbacks beat Mariners 8-4. Today we got Cubs at Phillies again at 5:45 p.m., and White Sox at Astros at 7:10 p.m. Lastly, Mariners at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. Back over to you guys.
We it's interesting how Carl and I don't just joust on the air. We had a couple clients call. There's a new, I'll say a Bitcoin sort of thing coming out. And what do you call these things? Stable coins or something?
Oh, God.
But first of all, it doesn't seem to matter that there's nothing behind any of these coins. They go up right. No matter what. I mean, they're basically fake stocks. But this one group came out with this thing called Net Gold. I don't even know if it's out yet, but they're soliciting people to buy it. And by the way, this is not a solicitation of any kind. But they seem to be addressing in some sort of a way the idea that there's nothing behind these things. And it's a little bit unique. And Carl, of course, doesn't think that it's anywhere near strong enough, and I agree with him. But that doesn't mean we can't argue about it, even though we agree about it. What they're doing is they're identifying an area of property, evidently, and saying, we know there's gold there, but we're not going to pull it out of the ground. So your Bitcoin, or your, not Bitcoin, whatever this thing's going to be called, is going to be backed by the gold that we know is in this ground. It's a little akin to, we know there's oil in this area in the Bakken. We just bought 10 square miles, and we're going to have a coin based on the oil we know is down there. Well, actually, I think that's probably better, but it sounds so wacky, and yet it's some attempt, I think, to address the fact that, God, is there anything behind this crap? And the answer is no. It's at least a little bit of an admission that at least the tulips had a tulip, huh?
Well,
little bit.
I mean, the thing that I find, as I pointed out in our conversation back and forth, if you claim you have some, you know, backing of some resource. I mean, this is something that people in the past have, you know, have run into the hard way. You own a piece of property, and all of a sudden, there's a discovery that, you know, with horizontal drilling, there's oil underneath your land, right? Well, you may own the property, but you may not own the mineral rights.
Just right. In general, though, in virtually every state, if you own the property, you own the mineral rights, right?
Well,
unless
you
have to be told you, when you buy this stuff, you have to be told you don't, right? I mean,
in an awful lot of places, in general, you don't own the mineral rights.
Give me an example. I mean, I think if I
Florida,
okay, that's, I was going to ask you. How was Florida?
The house I owned in Florida. I didn't own the mineral rights.
Who did?
It was disclosed that I didn't own them, all right, obviously, at the time I bought it. I didn't care because, first off, where it was, the odds of somebody being able to get a permit to extract whatever might be there was zero. Right? So...
the mineral... What does that mean? Does somebody something reaches a certain price, they can come and start drilling through your basement or what?
Well, theoretically,
you don't have a basement in Florida, but
they could put the rig on your property, but they could certainly put the rig across the street and drill horizontally.
Did they mention what the minerals were, or would you just assume it was oil?
No, mineral rights is mineral rights. I mean, they generally don't. There's no delineation. You either have it or you don't have it. Okay, but the thing is, you've got that. Then the second thing is...
Why wouldn't the property be a lease then? We actually bought it. You didn't have the mineral rights.
Chief, it's like an easement, okay? You can have a utility easement on your land, which gives the utility company the right to come in there and put an underground gas line in. And if it's there, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. It's there. You buy the property with it. It runs with the land. Once it's been granted, it runs with the land. And so that's the way it works. But this is extremely common, and in many places it makes absolutely no difference because there's no way that that you could strip mine for whatever in huge parts of the country anyway, right? But the thing is, in order for such a backing to mean anything at all, there has to be several things that have to be the case.
All right, for me, it's thinking of a million questions here. Can we back up here? Because I'd love to hear. There's a hunk of property. I assume at one point it was Indian government something. And
right.
Somebody says, those 10 square miles, I want to buy the mineral rights. Who do they buy them from?
Well, whoever. I mean, there's. If you go back far enough, there's a thing called a lordial title. Okay, which if you actually manage to acquire that, that also in many cases would exempt you from property taxes because it's actual ownership as opposed to title in fact, which is what most of your real estate is today. So,
well, somebody somewhere buys the mineral rights and 20 years later somebody comes by and says, by the way, I'd like to put some houses there. I mean, I'm kind of curious how it all just, as you know, when somebody says something that makes sense, I want to know how the hell it actually happens. It's a weakness I know.
Somewhere in the past, there was a transaction with someone where it occurred. Okay? And if you go back far enough, you can probably find it.
Well, again, I'd have to lob this one out there because nobody would even think of it if I didn't read it or I didn't tell them. The 20% of all the property in this country was given away to the five Western railroads.
Right.
In return for, so like Burlington Industries was the mineral parts of the land the Burlington Northern was given. So I get that part. You're going to give the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe 25 miles on each side of the track. Like say, so you walk by and say, I want to put a town here or whatever. We want to put houses here. And you say, well, and you're Atchison, Topeka, you're going to say, okay, you can build whatever you want. But by the way, we have the mineral rights in case anybody ever finds anything here. And you say go ahead or whatever, or you don't. I mean, I can see how it happens when the government granted something to like a railroad 150 years ago. Just in general, maybe was it railroad property in Florida? Might have been.
It very well might have been. I don't know. Yeah.
Just interesting.
Yeah, but this is kind of the thing that, you know, so basically you've got that, then you've got, okay, what are the environmental and permitting situation? And by the way, the fact that you have something in the ground does not mean that at a rational cost it's recoverable.
Right.
And all those things have to be true in order for you to supposedly have the backing that you claim you have.
Yep, well, I get it. Hey,
Otherwise, it's bulls.
Yeah. Well, hey, but can we... Let's change here a little bit. I don't know if Kenny calls in, we'll go to him.
He's here.
Oh, he's here? Okay. Just one question. Actually, Kenny can opine on this. We've seen... I don't know. There are going to be people that are maggots. They're going to tell me I'm nuts. But there's people that think the inflation is really what the inflation they tell us it is. But
oh my God!
In Boston today, they were talking about the restaurant group got a I won't say a convention, but a big meeting in the Boston area restaurant, saying that the amount of traffic is down dramatically. Well, how much dramatically is because the prices are so high. Some people are $50-$60 for like a lobster roll, and they're trying to find ways to lower the cost. And they claim it's utilities. It's not just the cost of food. It's utilities, leases, taxes, you name it, that are overriding. You almost can't have a restaurant, I mean, in some of these areas, whatever that people can afford.
Right.
I mean, it's reaching the stage where I think people better stop ignoring it. I mean, when I say ignoring it, I don't think I want to get out on the street and have the National Guard after my butt, but still... I mean, there needs to be a pitchfork someplace and what's going on here.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Carl, we'll talk at you Friday, bud. And I'm sure I'll be jousting with you over the internet before then. We have Kenny. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? And to your point about the restaurants, you're 100% right. Whether it's in Boston, whether it's in New York, or whether it's down here in Florida, the prices are out of control, to your point. But I will say, I was in New York last week. I go out to dinner. The restaurants are still full. I got to be honest with you. I can't go any place in New York where the place is not full. Or that you don't see plenty of people going out to dinner. It's just, I don't know if people are coming numb to it or they're just, you know, they're just kind of used to it now. But yes, I agree with you. Prices are out of control.
Well, our buddy, Dr. J, long ago, he had a birthday party. So I went and was at this little restaurant in the West Loop. And, you know, it was back, I don't think we were doing a show, so we're there, and of course, we're, you know, closing the place, but, you know, it wasn't midnight or anything, but we all head up to the bar, because there's nobody at the bar, and he's kind of pontificating a little bit on how everybody says that, this is back probably during the 2008 type of thing, because everybody says that things are going bad, and there's nobody around, look at this place, it was crowded, blah, 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 blah. So this guy's sitting next to me, and he nudges me, and he goes, "You know, your buddy's full of crap." I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "He'll never know how I'm doing." He goes, "By the way, I'm the owner." He goes, you're going to walk in and you're going to see what looks like a full restaurant.
Yeah.
He says, but he goes, you have no idea if people sit down. He goes, "I have all this overhead." He says, "If all of a sudden people get one appetizer or they don't get a dessert."
Right.
He goes, When we say it's down 20%, we mean 5% behinds and 15% ticket.
Right.
Because he says your buddy will never notice that. Yet he goes, I haven't sold a $60 bottle of wine in a month. Because I used to sell two of them a night. Because everybody's buying a $25-$30 bottle. It was cheaper back then. And he goes, it's really perfectly good wine. I'm not bitching at him at all. He goes, but I don't get that bottle. I'm selling half the desserts and half the appetizers.
Right.
He goes, the tickets are down. He goes, you'll never know that. It just looks like there's people here.
Well, that's true. There are people there, but to your point, to that point, I notice people sharing entrees, right? Husbands and wives splitting an entree. Or they're splitting one appetizer. They're not, to his point, he's right. They're not, you know, seeing tables full of, you know, five different appetizers and five different meals and all that. People are being much more conscious. I do agree. But I think that just goes to the point that it's expensive to go out to dinner.
Well, we were actually having this discussion last night because when somebody went to a restaurant, I said, you know, normally, plus the guys from the South Side like me, right? So I said, I said, you're a South Sider. You're going to sit down there and have your plate of pasta and say, gee, it's $25. It looks to me like it costs $1.50 You know, hey, right. I said, that's one way of looking at it. So the other way of looking at it is, there's only so many behinds can go in a seat every night. And oh, by the way, the person better average $40, or else they're losing money on you. They don't care if it's pasta. They don't care whatever it is. I got this. It was interesting, Kenny. Years ago, I'm sure you were. Remember when? I'm not going to say how old you are. Remember when Mickey Mantle opened a spot on what's the street? Just the south street of the park. Is it right by the plaza? What the street is that? Is that 59th or what the hell is that?
By the plaza, yeah, 59th Street.
Okay, so
yeah,
59th Street. Mickey Mantle opened this little steak place.
Yeah. It's right on Central Park South, 59th.
Yeah. And so I walk in, and it's a small place. I mean, New York restaurants are nowhere near as big generally as the ones in Chicago. And there are some, but basically there's not as much square footage, right, per restaurant. And so I walk in, and at that time the steaks are like $25, which was high back. This is 90-something. And I notice the burger is like $22. And I go, I guess if you're going to eat at Mickey Mantle's, it's going to cost you more than $20. You might as well have the steak. I mean, they weren't going to have a $6 burger on there, because your seat was just as valuable as the steak guy's seat, right?
100%.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it is interesting, and I guess when you think about it, you do make the point. The places, the restaurants have people in it, but there's certainly, I think, the tickets end up being smaller, right? Because people are not eating as much, or they're sharing. They're not ordering that expensive bottle of wine during the week, right?
Yeah.
So rates are revenues are down at the restaurants, even though it looks like it's full, and it is, but they're just not eating as much.
And the taxes and the lease and the utilities are relentless.
Right, and they're only getting worse. Right, the rents and stuff are only getting worse. Utilities, you would think. If utilities are going to come down, if energy becomes as abundant as it does, but you never really see those prices come down.
Well, if you walk in before people and you handed a guy $400 and said, "We'll just eat anything on the menu," the guy'd say, "Fine." Maybe not the best wines, but they'll feed you all night long because you're covered. And they don't care if you have dessert or not, right? At that point, hey, what do you make of we seem to be? You know, I've been ranting and raving about them. You know, for some reason, every country in the world has got their money supply ticking up the last couple of months. Now, that's usually good for markets, bad for inflation. We seem to be having the interest rates are ticking up a little bit. We've got Trump, pushing Powell to lower the rates. I think, Kenny, and I'll lob this one out there, that if they lower the rates and keep putting money in, you're going to see short-term rates maybe down, and you're going to see long-term rates continuing to go up, and I don't know if that's
lowering rates. How can they possibly lower rates? There's nothing that says they need. Okay, they're going to point to inflation. Oh, inflation's down, and we just said inflation is not down. Inflation really is not down. If you think about it, they're telling you it is. But if you live in America, to your point, you go out to the restaurant, or you pay your electric bill, or whatever it is. So people are still not feeling it. So I don't think the right thing to do is for the Fed to cut rates, and I don't think they're cutting rates.
They're taking some abuse, but.
Yeah, they're taking some abuse for sure, but that doesn't mean he's going to cut rates, or that he should cut rates.
Well, do you think if inflation gets worse, the market keeps going up a la Weimar Republic, or does the interest rates go up enough to where it quells the market a la 1978? What do you think happens?
Well, I don't think the market will continue to go up. I think the market is struggling. I think rates are going to end up. I think the 10-year is going to end up somewhere between 4.5 and 4.75, and so I think that'll provide some volatility for the markets. But then I think if the economy remains robust and rates are that level, then the market can function fine. If the economy starts to fall off the edge and rates are that level, then I think it becomes a different issue. Right? I'm in the camp that I think the economy remains robust, that rates are going to move a little bit higher, that J.J. Powell's not going to do anything, and we're going to be just fine. That's the camp I'm in.
From your lips to God's ear, I really hope you're right. What do you make of the labor numbers last week, where if you dug into the household piece, they were horrible? And you look at the amount of imports dropping like a rack, everybody thinks that's good. I don't know, and I seem to, and in this area, all of a sudden there's a lot of layoffs.
Yeah, you're starting to see the layoffs tick up. I noticed that, right? You're starting to see them tick up in retail. You're starting to see them just tick up a little bit, but they're not. Look, unemployment still remains at 4.2%, if you believe what the government's telling us, right? So if that's the case, it's not at that level yet that's going to cause any angst. I think unemployment's going to tick closer to 5% for the Fed to really kind of consider that to be an issue.
Kenny, just in general, I mean, I've always, this is how screwy I am with this. The first economics class I ever walked into at Notre Dame, we weren't there 3 days, and the guy said, the most useless number out there is the unemployment rate. and you know what? To this day, I think he's right. I mean, if you look at the one I look at, the A1, Carl always tells me I'm looking at the dummy page, but still, it's the summary, right? If you look at the amount of people in the workforce, well, there's people that are available to be in the workforce, and there's three groups. You're either working, you're looking for work, or we don't know what you're doing, right? But the we don't know what you're doing group is like 100 million people. The people we think you're looking for a job is like 7 million. So the interplay of that column, whether you're actually looking for work or whether you're not, it becomes such that it's like the tail wagging the dog. I mean, last month, they got 600,000 people essentially out of the work that were working and into the last column. And the so out of like 110 million people that are not working, 7 million are considered unemployed because they are working, and the others are just, we don't know what they're doing. So if you found 3 million people over there that actually were looking for a job, all of a sudden your unemployment rate's 8. I mean, the numbers are so bizarre. How they, because I think what's happened, Kenny, is they got lazy. I mean, have you ever been unemployed? I was unemployed once. I worked for, Jim Thompson was the governor. I was working for Uncle Jim. I was getting that, when Pullman laid everybody off. So yeah. I went over and I got my, in those days, well, there were so many people, Pullman got laid off, we didn't have to report in, but essentially, if you're getting your unemployment check, you're supposed to be reporting in. Now you can do it online and say, I interviewed at these 2-3 people. You don't just sit at home. You don't go do another job for cash. I mean, that's not the idea, right? Well,
right.
Now, even when you went off, say it was 26 weeks and you went off, you still, I think, they kept some kind of track of you. I don't know how the hell they did it. But now, the minute I think you go off that number, you go from actively looking for a job into the column where you're not looking for a job, just because they're not sending you a check. So if things actually got bad, the unemployment rate would not be showing an awful lot of people looking for a job that actually were. So, I mean, the numbers are pretty squishy. And the thing that I look at is the percentage of the workforce that's actually working. And when you look at all these deficits and all this other kind of stuff, and I'm not telling you anything, I'm just talking for the listeners. If that number is not 63 or 64%, I don't care what you do, tax-wise, I don't know what you do if you're Trump, you can, you know, how many executive orders you can find. You can't get, the number last month dropped from 60 to 59.7, which is horrible. At 59.7, those of us that are working, Kenny, 59.7% of us that are working cannot cover the 40.3 that aren't. Now, a lot of those people have all kinds of money and retired. We don't have to worry about them. Some are in school. But by and large, when that number was 64, 65, the economy was pretty healthy. And it hasn't been there for a long time. But if it drops like down to 55, we're screwed. They can try and cut taxes all they want, or it ain't happening, because you're going to have so many people that don't have a dime. We're going to have to take care of them somehow. And I don't know that this 10-year plan of bringing all these factories back here, and in the meantime, we don't sort of care what happened. I don't know if we get through that, Kenny. I honestly don't. I hope we do, but I mean, you're a little more enthusiastic because maybe where you're at, things are a little better than here. But here, I mean, I have a client who was with this advertising company, got bought by another company. The first thing they did was lay off 11,000 people. 11,000. Yeah. I mean, for God's sake. First of all, they should have been allowed to combine in the first place, but now that they have, you know, we have no antitrust department. Every time somebody combines, they just lay people off.
Right. But that happens all the time. That's not anything new, right? Anytime they combine, there's always a duplication of jobs, and so some people always end up losing their jobs when you get two firms combined like that. So that's not necessarily new. That's just the way business works.
Well, we never saw a merger we didn't like.
You're right.
I mean, what do we have an antitrust department for, to say yes?
I know, but, you know, is they going to say no to everything? They can't stop everything, right? There's something that makes sense.
Well, if you've got the top five people in the industry worldwide and two buys four, does that mean one has to be able to buy five to keep it close?
No.
But that's what we did with airlines, right? We let that one go through, so we got to let this one go through, right?
I suppose, right? But I don't know. I just think it's I'm not so sure that the economy's in such a tough position. I know that the Fed's going to meet next week. We're in the blackout period now. There's not going to be a lot of conversation. Actually, there can't be. Any of the voting members aren't allowed to speak to the media now. You get the non-voting members like Neil Kashkari that might say something if the mood changes, or you might have Nikki Timiraos from the Wall Street Journal write a story suddenly talking about why the Fed needs to cut rates, or Goldman's going to put out a special report. Those are all the deep throats for the Fed. So I think people need to pay attention about that. But I don't think rates are coming down. I just don't see how we can justify it.
Well, I'm going to ask you the question I've asked everybody else, but I have not asked you. But you have the man whose thumb is on the pulse of the economy. You know, that's you do. Real quick here, the U.S. Had been growing the money supply 5.2 all of a sudden last month, which is pretty high, by the way, considering we're not growing very fast. Last month, on an annual basis, 8.1. Now, it might come down. Now, I say last month, I'm talking April, because we don't get the... Now, I've got euro, year-over-year, 3%, February to April, 3.8. UK, year-over-year, 2.6, February to April, 3.9. India, year-over-year, 9.4. Year-over-year, February to April, 28.8. Japan, year-over-year, 0.08. February to April, 2.4, which is huge for Japan.
Yeah.
Kenny, who makes that call? Is there some little group in Davos or Jackson Hole or someplace? how does that get so orchestrated and so coordinated and all of a sudden just happen? Does Trump even know what's happening? Did Biden? I mean, is this happening behind? Who does this? Somebody's making this call.
Yes, somebody's making the call. I don't know who's making the call. Do I think that? I don't think Trump is making the call for sure. I don't think Biden made the call either, right? I just don't think the president's making that call, no matter who it is.
But it's a big call. It's a big call.
Who's making the call? Is the Fed making a call? Who's making that call? I don't know. That's actually a good question. We should do a little bit of research and find that out for next week's conversation.
Well, you know what we need is a girl and a dog to pull a curtain back.
We could have Dorothy pull the curtain back on the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, you can never see the man behind the curtain.
Right.
Well, I mean, who is the man behind the curtain?
No attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, is it? I mean, it's kind of you know, we're laughing at it, but it's a serious question. There's a massive change in tone. So somebody somewhere met in January and said, "This is what we're doing." And right. Who the hell is the somebody?
Right. Well, is this somebody the Fed? Is it Jay Powell? Is it the committee? I have no idea. You're right. Is it the Treasury Secretary? Is it, you know, was it Janet Yellen and now Scottie Bessent?
Well, was it?
Oh, that's
is, is it, is it a group of people we don't even know sitting in a room in Davos and say, "This is what we're going to do," and tell all the central banks that's what they're doing?
I don't know, but I'm going to have the answer by next week because I'm going to do some research.
You're going to go over to Davos. You know, I don't know what you got to do. You could get in. Go over to Davos and put little tape recorders underneath all the tables.
I get news to you. I don't want to go to Davos. I don't want to be part of that group.
Oh, come on.
No interest.
I'm not saying we want to be part of that group. Don't tell me if I had the opportunity for the two of us to sit at the bar in that place and just talk to people that came by, that you wouldn't take that opportunity? I would, in a second.
No, I would. No. I would. Yes. I would take the opportunity to do that. I just don't want to be. I don't want to be one of those people.
Oh,
that,
no.
I'd be a fly in the wall. Yeah, sit at a bar and talk to people, but I don't want to be a participant in Davos.
Plus, they would all. Because we're sitting there, they'd all think we are somebody. They just wouldn't know who we were.
they
think we must be somebody.
Yeah,
but you know, and we wouldn't say no. We just, why would we say no? I got a quick story for that. You know, Dr. J's wife, Bridget, terrific lady. She's a judge, right? Yeah. So she buys tickets for this thing up on the north side. And with some, you know, the guy running for the county chief, what the hell was his name? The kid was running. He's there, and I think Mike Quigley was there running. And there's this room, and so, you know, I dress up. Back when I, you know, looked better. I got the gray hair. I'm a tall guy. I look Irish. I look like I'm an alderman, right? basically. So there's four or five people sitting or standing around me talking, and Bridget walks up. She goes, "Tommy, knock it off. They think you are somebody." Well, Kenny, you look like you are somebody.
I was somebody. Yeah, maybe one day I'll be somebody.
No, I'm saying you and I went somewhere. We can clean up. We look
we
like we are somebody.
We clean up and right, pull it off as if we're really somebody. Yeah. Good. No doubt about it.
Plus, how much? The problem is, what do you think the martinis are? 25 a piece? Maybe 50? Well, we'd have to bring our shekels with us, right? You know, we'd get those schmoes to buy. If they think we are somebody, just to know who we are, they'd be buying us stuff, right?
Yeah.
I think it would be fun. Anyway.
Yeah.
I'd even do Jackson Hole. It's closer.
Yeah. All right, I got to jump.
All right, take care, buddy. S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ futures up 32. Hey, Professor.
Hey, Tom.
How are you? Now, I don't know if we'd bring you to the bar with us for that thing. You'd be launching off at some economic thing. They'd know you were a professor. Tell me that wouldn't be fun, though.
Oh, it'd be fun, yeah. Not a lot of people I bump into want to talk economic statistics or data analytics, I'll tell you that.
Well, that's why you love me. I love it. I love that stuff.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, though, when I go to the doctor's office and they find out that I teach economics and statistics, my appointment that should have lasted 10 minutes usually lasts an hour, though, because they love to ask questions like that. I mean, they love to go deep into it. And if my wife is there, she's kind of like rolling her eyes in the background.
You don't even look at her, know she's rolling her eyes.
Well, she plays along really well.
Well, but you know, because a lot of people, you know, you hear about stuff, and the weird part is, I'm like that in just about every subject.
Yeah.
I mean, if the guy sits down next to me and he says, "I'm a truck driver," well, in the next hour, what's the best trucks?
Those guys are some of the.
Yeah, but I want to know everything.
People to talk to.
I find everybody's profession.
Well, those truck drivers, they are listening to podcasts, listening to radio. Those are interesting dudes there, man. I love talking to those guys.
Well, there was a saloon in South Bend that we used to go on Friday nights because they had a fish fry during Lent. They had a pool table, and they also had a poster on the wall. It said, "Remember, everybody else in the world, job is easy, and they're paid way too much except you," which is, I think, the way a lot of people. I never felt that way. If I'm sitting next to
you know,
if I'm a truck driver, how many people feel that way? Everybody.
Yeah.
But if I'm sitting next to a truck driver, I can't wait to learn about driving trucks and the trucks and how you buy them and what kind of mileage you get and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't care what it is.
Well,
I find everybody's job fascinating.
Just the amount of gas they go through at a Flying J and a Pilot gas station, a truck stop, man, it's just crazy.
Well, they used to get just off the top of my head, I think they used to get the big old cab overs and stuff. I think they would get 3 to 6 to a gallon. Now I think they're pushing 8 or 9.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
I mean, it's a whole different. You know those things, they used to be 8 cylinders, they're all 6 cylinders.
Those big diesels?
Yeah.
Those cylinders are huge. Must be a foot in diameter, though.
Yeah, they're huge. And you know, what they do now is they used to, the motors, you know, they used to wear out, right? Well, now, you actually, with a huge tool, I don't know how big of a thing you need to take, you can take the cylinder is actually a sleeve. It goes in, there's a big cylinder hole, and there's another one that goes in there, and that becomes the cylinder. So after like a million miles or something, you can reach out and pull that cylinder out and put a new one in.
Hmm.
It's like a battleship. They used to have to put a different the thing that stuck out of the ship. They had to replace those after like, you know, 1,000 shells went out or something.
Yeah, well,
you took the inside out and put a new inside.
That's crazy that you can replace the cylinders.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. I didn't even know that.
They go. How many miles you going?
Well, you'd want that though, because pulling an engine out of one of those trucks, that's got to be pretty expensive. So, you know, it just behooves the company that owns the trucks to want an engine where you can replace the cylinder. I mean, that just makes sense to me.
My truck was in the shop one day, so I take an Uber. And of course, you know, I BS with the Uber guy. It turns out the guy's a master diesel mechanic. And I go, "Okay, what are you doing driving the Uber?" You know, that's the obvious question. The guy goes, "God, I hated it." I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "I never got to talk to anybody." Mm-hmm. He goes, they dropped this huge diesel motor on me, and I would rebuild the thing, take me a week to totally rebuild it, by myself in this garage, And at the end of the week, they're paying me, you know, 35, they're paying me, what, 40 bucks an hour. So that's, you know, 40 times 40 is 1,600 bucks, and they're charging the guy 10 grand. And I go, screw that.
I become a user driver. Nice margin for the company.
He goes, I like driving. I like the people that get in here. I make just as much. He goes, and I don't sit there by myself all day doing stuff where all I'm doing is making money for somebody else. And I'm going, there's a shot at industry today, huh? We're paying people.
Well, you know, the Uber drivers and the cab drivers and the truck drivers, man, they're a fun group to talk to, I'll tell you that. I mean, I love talking to the Uber drivers in Utah. And a lot of them came from, like, Afghanistan or that part of the country. And I kind of have an idea why they like living in Utah.
Well, compared to Afghanistan, I'd live anywhere except Afghanistan.
Well, they tell me that Utah reminds them of Afghanistan. You got the high desert, you got the mountains, you got the snow, and they like the family values of Utah.
Well, yeah. I mean, Utah's beautiful, for God's sake. I mean,
It's beautiful. It's beautiful if you go east of Salt Lake or you go south of Salt Lake, but the Salt Lake Valley itself, you know, it's like the Snake River Plain in Idaho. I mean, if you drive through Idaho on the interstate, you might think, well, Idaho's not very cool. It's just this big, flat, you know, desert. But you have to get 30 miles away from the interstate into the rugged country, because most of Idaho, when you drive through Idaho, most of it is on the flat Snake River Plain. And so you think that's what Idaho is. But if you fly from, like, Boise, Idaho to Lewiston, Idaho, or Coeur d'Alene, you get a good view of what it is. It's just 80% rugged country with whitewater rafting. And then Utah's like the same thing, except you have to go a little east or you have to go southeast to really see it. I mean, people haven't been to, like, Moab.
Well, if you go through Wyoming, is just all you see is tumbleweeds and whatever. It's just high.
Yeah, Wyoming is even higher elevation.
Yeah, it's just up there. I mean,
yeah.
We talk about cab drivers. Quick story, then we'll get into the economics of what's going on. When I used to fly to New York a lot for the SIBO, I land and I take a cab in, and I get in, and there's this older African-American guy. He had the white hair, total white hair. Good-looking guy, nice guy. And we start talking about, he goes, where are you from? And I said, Chicago. And he goes, hey, can you tell me who the first citizen of Chicago was? And I said, sure, it was DuSable, French guy, black guy. He says, out of all the people in Chicago, you're the first guy who's ever had that. So we get into this huge conversation. And I said, he goes, yeah, you know, I'm pretty much retired. And I go, so what are you doing driving a cab? He goes, well, cab company's like down the block. So we live here 9 months a year, and we got a place down south. And I've been driving a cab my whole life. I said, you know, even if you really have a good wife, he goes, you're just not supposed to be there 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, it's a couple days a week. I walk down the block. She gets a chance to do what she wants to do, go out, see her friends, vacuum the place without even me having to move my feet. And you know, we're just a hell of a lot happier, he says to me. He goes, everything's perfect. We never fight, but I'm just not supposed to be there 24/7.
Well, you know, when you've been around with somebody for like 20 years, you know, she's heard all of your stories.
Oh, yeah. And so the guy starts telling me.
All your analysis.
So the dude starts telling me about his kids. Well, one of the kids is a doctor in the military. He shows me a picture. God's sake, the guy looks like a movie star in his uniform. Wow. And the daughter graduated number one from NYU Law School. And the other kid is in the Army somewhere. The first one is a surgeon at the University of Chicago. The third one is in the Army, and he's doing real well, but they want to put him through med school. But to do that, I think he said they wanted 8 years or something. So the brother, University of Chicago, says, hey, screw that. Tell him to get out of there. I'll pay for his med school. Mm-hmm. And the daughter said, I'll chip in. He goes, that's the way I raised my family. I'm sitting there going, God, you got to be fathered a decade, for God's sake, or the century. Yeah.
Well, you know, the two-parent families, no matter what the race is,
yep.
Two-parent families, the kids really tend to thrive.
Yep.
It's the broken one-family households that really struggle. You know, black, white, Asian, Hispanic.
Yep.
The two-parent families, the kids tend to thrive.
Well, they were, but this guy had serious work ethic. But, you know, you could make if you've been a cab driver in New York for the last 40 years, I think you can make a pretty good living there. I mean,
if you're talkative and you're interesting, man, I tell you, you're going to get some serious tips.
Yeah.
I think. especially from those investment bankers and the wealthy people that live on the penthouses that maybe take cabs. You know, the people that take cabs that make have these high incomes. I think if you can have a conversation and you're really good at it and you're not judgmental and you live by the c'est la vie principle, I think you can make bank on the tips.
Remember that show, Taxi Cab Confessions?
I don't remember that, huh?
Oh,
I remember the TV show barely. With Danny DeVito.
The people who they'd get in a cab, they're regular people. Yeah. And they could be gay, they could not be gay, they could be making out in the back seat,
or
talking about some guy, and whatever people talk about, you know, when they don't think anybody's listening, you're being filmed and they're taping it.
Hmm.
And people are making blithering idiots out of themselves, or messing around. God knows what they're doing. Back then. Well, they'd ask them if they want to be on TV, but they show them the tape first.
Yeah.
And they show them what an idiot they were. People say, go ahead. wait a minute.
People want to be heard.
Wait, you're back there, you're talking to some guy about two girls you met and how they're both, you know, they're both bitches or they're both whatever. I wouldn't do that anyway. It's not my style, but if I did, I sure as hell I wouldn't show it to me if I actually was overserved, which I try never to be. Why would I want that on national TV?
people want to be seen and want to be heard, you know, for the most part, right?
It's unreal. Yeah. Hey, we talked to Kenny, talked to Carl about, you know, where's the economy going? I'm not going to be fooled this time by this turn up in the money supply and not be long the market. When it happened all during the Obama administration, I kind of fought the market going up, thinking, why are we going up every day? Not putting two and two together.
Well, the Fed's not raising interest rates. It's not changing interest rates, but you look at lending, and lending is the mother milk of monetary expansion, right?
Yep.
So you look at lending, it's growing, and then you got, and most of it's being driven like by margin debt. So when that's going on, you gotta be long the stock market.
Yeah, well, you really do.
And maybe if there's some bad news in the market, you know, I think the key is, when the stock market really starts to accelerate, when it bends upward rapidly, that's where I think people got to think, maybe I can sell a position here, because, you know, it's going to come down. There's going to be an adjustment. You know, it's just accelerating too fast. You kind of pull things out, move some stuff into some, you know, liquid stuff like bonds or something, and kind of wait it out, and then jump back in after the 20% correction. But you can... If you go back in history and you see all these 20% corrections, usually what happens is there's this acceleration, you know, this ultra exuberation, you know, ultra exuberant behavior, and the it bends upward. When it starts looking like, you know, the umpire's putting his hands up for a touchdown, when it starts bending up like that, you know, maybe pull some money out, wait for a correction, and then put it right back in, because what is the Fed going to do? The Fed's going to print money. It may or may not lower interest rates, but it's going to print money. So,
well, what
you know,
is,
in the long run, you can make it in the long run.
What I mean is, when you and I have had this discussion before, and we keep nipping around the answer, and I don't know if either one of us has the answer, although if anybody does, it's probably you. I think that if this happens, I've been stunned the whole way, let's put it this way, that somehow or another, the people who have... money and risk-free assets have never kept up with inflation. We're during the last phase, the 70s, I'll say 67 through 83.
You
always did. I don't think this, maybe this is just my old age talking, I don't think they're going to get away with it this time. You know, I honestly don't. If they keep putting money in the system, even if they lie on the CPI, which I think they're doing constantly. I don't know that this they're going to keep, unless the Fed is willing. Last time, I think the reason, I think, I'll lob this one out there, it was so obvious to me in 2021 that the best trade since I entered the business and the Dow was 800, the best trade was to sell those bonds. It with the 30-year bonds at 1.5% or wherever they were, because they're only going one way and that is up. I did that for clients intermittently for a year and a half. And I'm going to say I got it shoved up my behind as many times as I made money. I'm very truthful on this. I mean, it's okay. I don't want anybody thinking that I do better than I do. I'll tell you when I'm doing all right. I'll tell you when I'm not. I never, I mean, granted, if I would have just, you know, sold the bond short or the TLT short or something when it was 125, which now, by the way, it's 86, and just not looked at it for 3 years, we'd had a winner, okay? But by and large, the Fed went out, and if you, they bought up those bonds to the tune of, what, how many trillion dollars? $7 trillion or something?
Yeah.
The obvious move was to short them, and every time you did, you ran into the Fed steamroller. They kept them down so the banks could get away with paying people 1.5% when they're making 25 on a credit card. They floated those banks back into business by doing this. Now, I don't think they're going to do that again. So if you start getting an inflation rate that's actually 5 or 6, I think you're going to see these long-term bonds at 7 or 8 or 9. Yeah. And I think everybody thinks no matter what happens, those rates are never going to go up. I don't think it happens this time. I don't think they can pull it off a second time. What do you
think? Well, I think the reason why the rates go up, I mean, people expect inflation to be higher. Investors expect inflation to be higher, so they want to be compensated for it. And, you know, that inflation comes from the Fed. I read this article on Finance Flux, or the Daily Huddle. I don't know how to pronounce that. But the Federal Reserve is like, remember Silicon Valley Bank a year ago?
Oh, yeah.
Right? They're on the opposite side.
I think we might be pushing 2 years on that, but
yeah.
Year and a half.
Yeah, 2 years, yeah. They were on the wrong side of the yield curve, right? They got crushed by having these 10-year bonds that they purchased at really low yields, right? The Fed is doing it right now, except the Federal Reserve can print money to paper over those losses. And apparently it's got $1 trillion in what it's calling unrealized losses, where it's on the wrong end of the bond trade, right? So, you know, the thing the Federal Reserve can do is it can just print money. And that's the money printing.
The issue with Silicon Valley, if Hal Snar was a client of PTI, and despite our best advice, you decided to buy a bunch of 30-year bonds and paid 120 for them, because when I say 100, say the printed rate on the bond is 6%, and the market rate is 2.5. Well, the way you equalize that out is pay more for the bond, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to pay 120 for the bond, and oh, by the way, 30 years from now, you're only going to get 100, which is not the best deal. We would have advised against that. However, a lot of people did it, and a lot of banks did it. Now, the difference if you'd have done it, every month when you get your statement from PTI, which would be from RBC or IB, it'll say, here's Hal. He bought 1,000 bonds at 120, and now, by the way, they're 86. You're down $36 per bond, and you're gonna show the loss.
Yeah.
Right now, if you're a bank, or an insurance company where you make this election that you're going to hold them all the way to the end, you never have to show that loss, even though you get to sell them the day you'd be down. So what happened with Silicon Valley Bank is they had a cash run, and they actually had to turn around and sell those things. And once you sell them, you have to take the loss. The loss was always there.
Yep.
And so as time goes by, it becomes a little less of an issue. But what do you if you want to bring up this conversation, I'll ask you the most extreme question. What do you suppose the mark-to-market portfolio, for lack of a better term, of the European Central Bank looks like when they were buying crap down to negative interest rates?
Yeah, I don't even want to.
Can you even imagine what that would be?
Yeah.
Because they were probably, now, in order for that to happen, again, if I'm getting too crazy here, I'll kick me to long distance. If the rate of the bond, the U.S. puts out a bond, a 30-year bond, the coupon is 5%, right, Hal?
Yeah.
So if you pay, you know, I could do the math, or I used to be able to do the math by hand. If the market rate was 4%, you probably got to pay, what, 108 for that bond, something like that, 109 to equalize them? Because the bond's going to pay 5 on 100. But the market rate's 4.
Yeah, I used to be able to do those calculations when I taught money in banking. I haven't taught money in banking.
Yeah, I haven't had it in a long time. But
2017.
But I'm going to say, to get that down to below zero,
yeah,
you probably had to pay, what, 180? So all the money you, all the interest rates you got for 30 years plus the money at the end was negative.
Yeah.
We only added up to 99 or something like that, and you sit there and go, what the bleep? I can't imagine what those things are marked to sitting on their balance sheet right now.
Yeah, it reminds me of that movie that Kevin Spacey was in where, you know, it was that movie about the financial crisis.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, I built my career over 30 years, you know, and you're asking me, I know that the market price of these bonds is $20, and you're asking me to go out and sell them at $90? I'm done, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what the Fed is doing. That's what the European Union was doing, right? They were buying that stuff up, but they put themselves in Kevin Spacey's character's position. But unlike Kevin Spacey and the firm he worked for, the Federal Reserve can print money to paper that over, right?
Or they just, you know,
they're not going to go bust.
Or they just wait it out.
Yeah, they just wait out. Yeah, yeah.
And I think
they can wait it out by printing the money to cover the cash flow that's required to service those.
They're caught in the I think the trick bag is when they went out and bought all these mortgages at 6.5% or 7%, whenever they did that during the COVID. It was actually before the COVID, right?
Yeah, they put a price floor on those mortgage-backed security bonds.
But those things run off. And if people refinance at 3 or 4, they run off. So, but if they buy them at 3. They're not going to run off. They're going to be there forever, right?
Yeah.
Quick story. I mean, I think I've told it before, but
I think they own more mortgage-backed securities than I think government treasuries. I saw an article last week.
Maybe because they're not running off, but for a while they were. I thought the top the mortgage was like 30 or 35%. But just to give you an example, a real life example how this works. My stepfather was a pretty clever fellow. He bought. He used to trade a lot of the closed-end funds. Remember those things, Mel?
Closed-end funds?
Yeah, closed-end funds were the fund with Baker Fentress. They all were. They all came out in the 20s, but they had a portfolio of stocks, but they traded on the New York Stock Exchange. And then let's not get into closed-end funds, but let's talk about that next week because they're fascinating. There's still a few of them around, but nobody trades them anymore. But there's a market value, and then there was a trade, and then there was a value of the actual fund if you valued all the stocks in there, and they never really matched. And if you get down to a discount, he'd buy them, and then there were books on them. In fact, I read the book. I gave it to him, and he started trading those for the next 10 years. He made money. I didn't, of course. I mean, I just gave him the book. But
did bookies run the books?
No, they just there was they would tell you what stocks they had and what the value. The trick was if they sold a stock for a profit, then you had to pay. The tax came to you. The tax bill came to you.
Mm.
But anyway, he buys. I think it was you guys. I think it was the veterans that he bought up. They would go out.
Yeah, that's the first time I've heard about him.
But next week we'll talk about it because it's a fascinating subject. The he bought into this bond pool, and I think it was a veterans bond pool. And the rates were, you know, this is back in when the rates were really up there. So the rates were like 10% or something. The veterans probably never got that. I would say 8.5%. And he bought, you know, he put in, I'm going to say 10 grand or something, or 15 or 20, whatever it was. And the idea was that he was going to make this 8% for an average of 25 years or something.
Hmm.
Okay, well, the problem is he actually bought into, let's say there were 10,000 mortgages in there. You know? Well, every time some got redeemed, he got a little chunk of that mortgage.
Yeah.
So, when the rates started coming down, he's supposed to be getting an interest check, say, every month for $500. Okay, the check's $550, the check's $600, the check's $700. But all of a sudden, the amount of bonds that he's making interest on, there's less and less. So the interest that he's supposed to be getting at $500 is now $400, $300, $200. You know, after he died, it so happened, he died maybe 18 years ago. My brother was managing the money part of it. Says the last check, the last mortgage, the last check was for like 80 cents. The last mortgage finally was refinanced. But I don't think he made it 10 years out of the 20 where all of them got refinanced. So the problem is, if you buy into these things when the rates are high and you think you're locking yourself in, you're not. Because if all of a sudden somebody pays it off early, but now the Feds, the stuff they bought at 2.5% and 3%, they're going to have that forever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's not going to run off unless somebody gets divorced or something, right, or dies. I mean, right? I mean, if you have a 3% mortgage, that's why there's no houses available.
I'm not touching our 2.5%, or I think mine's 2.8%.
Yeah, I'm saying you're
not. The VA if you have lowered the interest rate to like 2.8%.
Yeah, if you have another set of triplets, you're putting an addition on that place. You're not going anywhere, right?
Well, we're hoping to hang on to it so that, and I think it's a good investment because of real estate property, because Utah is like number one 3 years in a row, and it's growing, and there's only so much land in Utah because 80% of Utah is federal, you know, federal lands that you can't develop on. So everybody gets squeezed in that corridor along Interstate 15 from Provo to Ogden. So, you know, I think supply of houses really limited there, and I'm kind of hoping the thing doubles. I mean, it doubled in about 8 years, and I'm hoping it doubles again, because if it doubles again, if worst case scenario happens and I don't have any job prospects and I lose all my work, I can sell it and pay off all our debt and basically just have to pay for electricity. So that's in the back of my head. But yeah, Utah, it's a great investment property for us, man.
Well, back in the
nothing but go up.
Way back in the day, you could get assumable mortgages where you could that mortgage could go to the next buyer.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now that's that, you haven't seen one of those in 20 years, have you?
Yeah. Well, I think what it is did it go away during Dodd-Frank, that legislation?
I think it really went away long before that. That might have codified it. Okay. But yeah. I mean, that probably codified it.
Yeah. I think the reason for that is because, you know, government actions in housing seem to be skewed against smaller investors who want to create a real estate business. It's really difficult for people to get off to launch their businesses if they want to build a portfolio of rental properties. The laws seem to be skewed in favor of incredibly difficult investors.
I had two buddies when the trading floor kind of closed down. I told my buddies, one was now a nice client, they got in the remodeling business, and they had some money, and they bought you know, the neighborhoods weren't the best, but that's okay. They bought a house for like 70, put 50 into it to where it was all livable and everything, and maybe even got somebody Section 8 paying a decent rent. So they had enough money to do like, I'm going to say 6 or 7 houses, Hal, and all of a sudden, you know, all their equity is in the houses. And they go to the bank and they say, we'd like a loan for house 8 or house 7 or whatever it was, and they go, wait, we can't do that. And they, what are you talking about? Our firm has got, you know, 7 houses worth of our equity in these houses is, we'll say the sale price is, you know, 7 times, say, 200,000. That's $1.4 million. We don't owe anything. We want to use the equity in those houses for the next house. Oh, no, we can't do that. Now, imagine a big firm them saying, no, we want, like, we want you to sign over title to your houses and personal debt and all this crap, and these guys go, what are you talking about? But there's no way that now if you were BlackRock, that guy's not signing his house up for, is he?
No, he's getting he's gonna leverage with 1% down.
Yeah, I mean there's no the banking system that I grew up with. I mean, when I remodeled places, First National Bank of Evergreen Park would let me. Well, yeah, he had one that was a success. He had a car loan here. You paid it off. Blah blah blah. Sure, you need $10,000. Here you go. I mean, 10 grand back then was like 100 now, right?
Yeah.
And they always got paid back. But now, oh, your parents got to sign over their house. They got to do what?
That's crazy.
Like, what are you talking about?
You know, it's funny. I was reading this history. I'm continuing reading this history. My in-laws were in town last week, so I didn't have a lot of time to read through it. But this, you know, we're all told that the Industrial Revolution started in the UK, but it really didn't. The Industrial Revolution was a continuation of the American Revolution. It was a continuation of it. And the reason why I say that is because in America, people were just free to do stuff. I mean, they were free to pursue passions and profits. in old Europe with the kings and whatnot, the job of the government was to ensure that the current incumbent firms succeed. And it's crazy, the steam engine was actually invented by the ancient Greeks. And in like the 1700s, a German invented a steam engine and was operating it up and down the rivers, transporting people. And guess what happened? It's an example of history tends to repeat. And repeated history repeats repeatedly. The people in the wood boat business with the sails, they rioted and they sunk his boat, and the guy ended up penniless. The governments of Europe protected the incumbent firms with the wooden boats and the cloth sails by basically restraining this coming disruption.
Well, Britain was getting a break here, but they were. Yeah, that was the reason for the first Jefferson tariffs. Mm. Was it Britain? All their innovations were in textiles. They were the first people who were able to. Evidently, boy, I don't know anything about this, but if you can spin the thread, you can weave cloth at home.
Yeah.
But the thread was a big thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they had pretty much a worldwide monopoly on spinning thread.
Wools. Yeah.
And all that stuff. Cotton, too. People would ship the cotton there, and they would actually make the thread out of it. And Jefferson's first tariffs were to allow the American manufacturing of in the garment district to essentially get started, because the one in London was so much more efficient. That was one of the original things with the Confederacy versus, well, they weren't called the Confederacy back then, Southern states versus Northern states. Northern states wanted to be the ones who manufactured the cotton. And they want or manufacture the cloth.
Oh yeah, they did not want the Southern states to have a cotton thread industry.
But the Southern states were exporting all to Britain, and they didn't want the Northern states pissing them off by a tariff.
So it's kind of like with England. England wanted the United States to be the place where things are grown.
Yeah,
and they wanted all the industry on the island.
Absolutely.
SP Futures and the North up, was the same with the South with regard to that too.
SP Futures up 9. NASDAQ Futures up 35. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom, Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 31. We were up last night, and we went back down to flat. Now we're up again. The big stories this week will be CPI tomorrow, PPI on Thursday, and these U.S.-China trade talks, which I'm sure they're both going to declare victory no matter how screwed up they are. So that's the style on both sides, by the way. Well, one man's opinion, but they're not going to come out and say, boy, this thing's all screwed up. Who knows? Maybe they might. Let's hope not. DAX down 92.4%. FTSE up 45.5%. CAC around down 3. Call that flat. So Europe, not doing much and kind of mixed. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei, which was up a whole bunch yesterday. Individual stocks, not much going on. We got IBM up 260. IBM's one of the best stocks this year. McDonald's down 378. My machine seems to have so much stuff going here. Ricky, why don't you do traffic, weather, sports, and this thing will start moving.
Absolutely. Morning, Chiefs. 7:40 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 57 degrees right now with a high of 77. Hazy sun and smoke from wildfires in Canada still coming in hot. Might reduce the air quality today, so watch out for that. Tonight will be clear with a low of 64 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 84 degrees right now with a high of 107. Hot with plenty of sun and danger of heat stroke if you're outside for too long. Tonight will be clear with a low of 80 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Montrose, 42 minutes. We're looking at 57 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook, Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 45 minutes, Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 23 minutes, and lastly, inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 52 minutes. Let's talk about the Stanley Cup Final. Panthers take the lead yesterday with a score of 6-1. Series is now 2-1, and game 4 is this Thursday, June 7th, at 7 p.m. in Florida. That's Oilers versus Panthers, of course. NBA Finals, as of today, series is tied 1-1 between the Thunder and Pacers. Game 3 is this Wednesday, June 11th. Thunder's going to be at Pacers at 7:30 p.m. Lastly, MLB. Yesterday, Cubs lose to Phillies 3-4. Diamondbacks beat Mariners 8-4. And today we got Cubs at Phillies again 5:45 p.m. White Sox at Astros at 7:10 p.m. And Mariners at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. Back over to you guys.
We have those guys are taking 2 days off between these games. Are they going to try and get this past 4th of July, this NBA playoff, or what? Why can't they go every other day like they did in all the other series? It's crazy.
Yeah, they kind of dragging it out, aren't they? I mean, they compress the first couple of rounds and players are getting hurt, and then they just kind of drag this thing out. You know, what I don't understand about the NBA is how can a team beat a team on their home floor and then lose by 30 in the next game? I mean, are these players just taking games off? I mean, I don't remember Jordan ever taking off a game. I mean, Jordan wanted to sweep. But it seems like when a team wins on the road, the very next game on the road, they tank it.
In one man's opinion, Alfred, guy played ball an awful long time, but that was a long time ago, before three-point lines, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think if you watch what happens is, you know, some team comes out and they're hot, they can be hot.
Yeah.
Somebody runs up by 10 or 12 or something. The other team has this mentality that in order to get back in the game, you have to wing up a bunch of threes. And,
yeah.
And you start winging up threes where you're not set, you're not, you know, two passes to get the guy in the spot he wants to be in. So they wing up next time down the floor, the next four times they wing up threes, they clank all four of them, and now the other guys come down and score. Now the lead's 20 and the game's over.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's why you're seeing these blowouts.
Maybe it's the transition to the three-point game.
Yeah,
maybe that's what it is.
Because instead of, okay, we're down, let's make sure we get a good shot.
It's just a bad product, yeah. Though. It's such
a
bad
terrible
product.
Sure it is.
Yeah.
But that's I think instead of going down, working for a shot, using up most of the 24 seconds, in order to get back in it, you end up winging up a three with 20 seconds left on the 24 second clock, and then when your 8 point deficit is now 22 and you're done.
Yeah.
I mean, you see that happen, you know, kind of all over the place. But
I just don't. I mean, I grew up watching. I mean, I loved the NBA in the 80s. Early 90s. I just don't remember a Bird-led team or a Magic Johnson-led team or a Michael Jordan-led team or even the Pistons where they'd get a road victory and then lose by 30 the next game. I don't recall that.
Well, yeah, but you're seeing, like I said, what I think what you're seeing is a lot, if a team goes, you know, 50% from the three-point line, they have a huge night. They score 120.
Yeah.
If they don't, they score 80. That's all they throw up.
Yeah, because today the game is really focused on the three-point shot.
Yeah. And
if you really think about it, Tom, in the 80s, the three-point shooters, the distance shooters, set shooters were white guys.
Yeah.
So if a fan from the 1980s, a 40-year-old fan in the 1980s of the NBA, is transported to 2025, what might that fan think? The fan might think, why did the NBA get so white? In terms of style of play, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but when you say white, they're not white from here; they're white from Europe.
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly. I mean, in the 1980s, the players that were playing above the rim that were dunking over 7-foot centers were guys like, you know, Dominique Wilkins. I think if Dominique Wilkins were to play today, he'd probably be shooting up threes.
Well, yeah, he probably would.
Yeah. Well, and that right there tells you how bad the product's gotten.
Well, what do you make of I couldn't watch the Cubs Friday night because they were on Apple, and the bars don't even get Apple, so you're skunked out of it. I'm somewhat confused. In fact, I'm very confused, Hal. You would think that after all this time, you know, we've got all these different leagues and TV and cable and all the other stuff, the streaming, you would think that these guys would have sort of figured it out where the money is. I mean, football, to a huge extent, except for Thursday night or a couple of games, is still all, I'll use the term, over-the-air TV. I won't say free because there's commercials and everything.
Oh, it's eventually going to go to streaming.
Well, I wonder what the math is. Now, Apple paid up for Friday night, so the Cubs are on Apple. Now, first of all, unless you're a monopolist, I mean, you go through the numbers on the monopolists all the time. The thing that bothers me about monopolies is you don't have to give a crap about your client.
You don't have to, yeah.
Exactly. I keep talking about.
And if you're protected by the government, if your market share is protected by government through rules and regulations and licensing, then you can be really reckless with your customers.
Yeah. Well, that's this advertising, because I'm one of the people involved is my client. When you look at the two companies, OMC essentially bought IPG or merged or whatever you want to call it, and they're the number. OMC, I think, is the number two biggest advertiser worldwide, and IPG is number four. So they let them get together. Well, now, to me, that's a, you know, combination to restrain competition. Probably means one will have to buy five or three, right, just to stay competitive or some whatever crap they throw at people.
Yeah.
And now they're laying off all these people, and, oh, by the way, they're shifting a lot of the customer service to India, which leads me to believe that they don't care if their customer service drops a notch or two notches or whatever. Not saying anything bad about people in India. I'm just saying it'll probably drop a notch, right? There's something, somebody here is calling from Wichita and somebody in India doesn't know where the hell in Wichita is, right, or something. But I'm curious in the... Now, when the Cubs did that, not the Cubs, but Major League Baseball, it's going. What's through their mind? Out of the bar, the Triple E Tap. I was there, and Nick. It's a Boston bar, so he's got the Northeast feed for all the hockey. He's got the Northeast feed for the colleges up there. He's got Major League Baseball. He pays for, which allegedly he's supposed to give every game, right? He's paying for the marquee channel, which the Cubs are on. And oh, by the way, he's paying for cable for ESPN, and you know he's got a. And he's paying for, he doesn't have to pay for Fox or the other, even though they come in through the cable, he could get those from an antenna. So he's paying five people, and all of a sudden, he doesn't have the game. I mean, how many times can you sell? Now, I don't know how much Apple paid them. Obviously, it was enough, Major League Baseball. But I'm going to say that the viewership of the game has to be, well, I didn't watch it. I mean, it's way less than it normally would be. So unless they're just only advertising their own stuff, I mean, if I'm Budweiser, I'm not paying as much for that as I am on Marquee or Over the Air or something. I'm curious as to what, or is it just the future? They think that's the future and they want to get in bed with these guys? Or what it is, the games they put on 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning on, was it something plus? How many people are going to watch a baseball game Sunday morning? And who's gonna buy this thing just for this one game? In other words, I don't understand the math, because football seems to have a model. Now, it's Salt Lake City. They took their basketball team, and they're back on free TV because they claim they were losing fans on the cable.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just curious.
I think they have to layer it, right? Like with the – I don't know if you're following what's going on with the Pac-12, but they're trying to get some higher profile games – on like cable, like network TV, and then they're gonna complement that with some streaming. So the games that aren't as, you know, big, they're gonna stream the other games. So I think you have to layer it. And if you think about the Cubs, and the Braves in the 1980s, they had those superstations, WTBS and WGN.
Yep.
And people in Oregon were either Cubs fans or Braves fans. And they're in Oregon, right? They're not Mariners fans because we're getting all these games that aren't broadcast on Monday Night Baseball, right? We're getting all the games people aren't interested in. We're seeing them. Now, I was an Astros fan, so I loved WTBS because the Braves played the Astros like, I don't know, 20 times a season, so I got to see all the Astro games.
Why does it not surprise me that you were an Astros fan?
Oh, man, I was an Astros fan. I loved Jose Cruz, and the pitching staff of the Astros in the 80s was just off the charts. You know,
I bet you even liked the Astrodome.
Yeah. Oh, they had that Andujar. I can't remember how to pronounce his name, but he was that left-handed pitcher that threw it 100 miles an hour or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
It was just incredible pitching staff.
But you wonder if these guys, if they know what they're doing. I mean,
I think they have to layer these. They have to have these bundle deals, right? They have to complement their big games with they want to sell all the games, right? And so the unimportant games, the games, you know, between the teams at the bottom half of the standings, nobody's going to watch those. So,
but who do they think? You know, who do they think is this? This is like the fourth time in my lifetime, Al, that gambling was going to save us.
Yeah.
I don't know if Utah is much of a gambling state or Idaho, but in Illinois.
Well, there's no lottery in Utah. If you want to play the lottery, you have to drive to Wyoming.
Well, that was just what I was going to say. In Illinois, we had horse racing. That was the gambling, right? And if you won, everybody would go to the track, and they had huge, you know, crowds at the track. 20,000 people every day in Arlington Park. I mean, but if you went in a barbershop, somebody was always going to traffic. You want to get bet down, you gave the guy the dough. Everybody trusted everybody. It was just a whole different world. Then all of a sudden, one day, they said, oh, man, we need this lottery. And everybody else got the lottery, we got the lottery. And by the way, it's going to pay for all the schools.
Well, if you think about the state lottery, it's basically a monopoly on gambling, right? Where
they dictate
the terms.
They essentially took it away from, was the numbers racket in the black neighborhoods?
Yeah.
Or the mob had something. So all of a sudden, then they go, okay, well, the next thing is we're going to have off-track betting. Because, why does she have to go to the track? So they put up about 10 of these off-track betting places. And then they decide, okay, well, now we need casinos. But all you do is screw the person before you. And then they said, okay, anybody can have, now you got these off-track betting facilities. You've got these horse tracks that when they're not running are these big, beautiful places. Oh, okay, we're going to allow everybody to have not a slot machine, but a poker machine or something in restaurants. But no, you can't put it in the off-track betting facilities, and you can't do it in the racetracks. Because what you're doing is you're getting it seems like you're getting money from the next group of, I'll use the term investors, paying off their politicians, and they're screwing the politicians of the previous generation. So now you keep driving your horsing down to nothing. Your off-track betting place almost all closed. There might be a couple that are open. And now you're taking your casinos and you're shoving their stuff in everybody's restaurant. You don't have to leave the restaurant to play a one-armed bandit, essentially. So at some point, I'm one of these guys that says, you got a lot of people that like to gamble. You got a lot of people that don't. And somewhere along the line, there's a percentage of people's income that's going to get gambled somehow. Now, all of a sudden, oh, no, if we have this sports gambling, if we find a way, people are not only going to gamble on sports with like most of their income, they're gonna pay for streaming to see Sidewash play Slippery Rock. And I'm going, well, that's an interesting model, but I don't know if that's going to work. Why do I need to watch? I went to Notre Dame. I still watch them because my buddies all watch them. If I don't watch it, I'll look like I don't know anything. But do I really need to watch an Illinois-Iowa game? I mean, just because I'm betting on it? No. I mean, I guess I could stop trading for people and gamble on sports all day, but how far can we drive this? I mean, where are we going to go with this? Every one of these times, it was going to save us. The casinos are going to save us. The lottery's going to save us. The off-track betting. I don't feel so saved. The state's broke still.
Well, I think the problem in history is government regulating industries into favored monopolies. Going back to the steamer story that I was telling earlier, the British government created a monopoly on steam engines, and it didn't thrive because it was protecting the schooners, the wooden schooners that were sailing in the wind, right? But in the Americas, steamers took off.
Yeah.
You had a guy invent a steam engine that ran a steamship up and down the Hudson River, and he had a monopoly on it, but his ship sank, and he ended up losing it.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, and then the Livingston and the Fultons, which I think are the people the streets are named for in New York City or Brooklyn, they backed this guy who was able to purchase the monopoly rights along the Hudson River and the East River. And then once people realized how fast steamships were, it just took off in the colonies. And the governments weren't set up to protect the schooners, the wooden ships. The steamers quickly replaced the schooner ships, and the ports in Britain were closed to all ships but British ships, British merchant ships. But what the steamships would do from America, they would get in really quick, and they would basically smuggle the goods out of and into England. And those steamships cut the trips in half, maybe by a factor of two or even three.
Oh, yeah.
So they could slide into ports in China. They could pay higher prices for the tea, and they could get it to England really quickly, and they would slip in. And it was so bad that the British government was thinking about maybe going to war over this trade. But what they ended up doing is they ended up liberalizing the trade, and they ended up opening their ports. And it ultimately, and they were getting crushed.
Yeah, can you imagine getting one of those old steamships? I don't know, if you were a mechanic, maybe I'd do it, but
yeah.
Leaving San Francisco and heading to China, one of those old things without the sails as backup. What do you do if the
Lake Kong's probably had a backup, right? You know, the early ones probably had the two systems. But yeah, it cut the trip by a factor of three. And so they were able to pay higher prices. And the British shippers, they're stuck in port looking for product to buy. And it's all being they're all being outbid by the faster steamships from America.
Well, you know, a story sort of similar to the when the they had steamships on the Mississippi River going up and down, big paddle wheelers. And they, you know, they weren't just passenger, they were freight too. And up and down. Well, the Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific Railroad built the first bridge over the Mississippi River, the first railroad bridge. And of course, the steamer guys were all pissed off, right?
Oh yeah, they want to burn it down, just like the guys in Germany when the first steamship went up and down a river in history, right? They burned down the ship. They don't want the competition.
Well, one guy kind of takes it upon himself to ram the abutment of the bridge and wrecks the bridge.
Yeah.
So the Rock Island sues the steamship company, and it's this big fight in court. And guess who is the attorney for the railroad? Because he made a lot of his money.
I would think it's probably Lincoln.
Yeah, it was Lincoln.
Yeah,
because he was the guy who was one of the attorneys. I don't know if he's a major attorney for the Illinois Central.
He was the top attorney for the railroads.
Oh, God, yeah.
Before he became president.
So he had one of the greatest lines in court. They get the steamship captain up there, and he's railing about how the thing, you know, the bridge was Mississippi's pretty friggin' wide. The thing was a menace to navigation and something. So I think when Lincoln, who I guess was, you know, always pretty good with words, yes, the guy goes, let me get this straight. The abutment moved to hit you, or did you hit the abutment? Which, the guy looks at him and he goes, well, I was moving, I hit the abutment. Lincoln goes, I'm done with this guy.
Well, you know, that just goes to show you how far people will go to knock out their competition. They'll use government to do that. And the country that fosters the most economic freedom, the most political freedom, is the country that's going to be on top. And that's how the United States went from a nation of farmers to the most powerful
economy. Yeah, now what we want to do is protect everybody.
Now we want to set these monopolies. You know, there's a fight in the United States, and I think it's been going on for 100 years or even longer, where there's a group of people that want to make us Europe, right? Where we have these neo-mercantilist policies that create government-protected monopolies. There's that group of people. They want to. You know, I've been talking to my mother-in-law about this, right? The policies, the inflationary policies of the federal government and the Treasury and the Fed, I think there's an intention there. And the intention is to make everybody a renter. Make everybody a servant.
Well, I don't know about that, but every
you, but you this, look at this, home prices and you look at car prices.
The single biggest,
I think there's this effort to make people renters.
There's the single biggest benefactor of inflation is the government.
Yep.
Without
yep.
any. Secondly, the companies that are monopolists that basically, you know, kiss their ass. But is, yeah. I mean, and when you we talked, I don't know if you were listening.
Pay
earlier,
for the re-elections.
But, I mean, if you were to go through, I probably could. Will take me some time. We're not going to. It's not going to be snow this weekend. But if it was the middle of winter and we had a 4-hour snowstorm on Saturday morning, I might actually sit down and do this. I can still do this kind of stuff, as can you. I would like to go through the, and I don't know. I'd have to have you guys help me because I don't know all of this stuff. I used to know some of it when I did taxes, but I'm going to say the difference if you take insurance, governmental assistance on insurance, maybe some governmental assistance on property taxes, which some places have, depending on how much money you make, and the tax rates and the inflation rate and people's. Even in stuff like Social Security, the difference, let's say, since 2000 and, where are we, 2025, since 2000, let's say the inflation rate was up 40%, which I believe it is, and I don't think
it is. Oh, yeah, it definitely is, yeah. I would agree with that.
If you were lucky enough.
On the low end.
Yeah, if you were lucky enough to get a 40% raise, which I think most people have not, and you happen to be in that where the, you know, the median wage was around 37, 38, let's say 40, and be generous, and you got a 40% raise, talking about Southside, and you're now making 56. If you add it together, the increase in taxes from the 40 to 56, from 12 to 22, if there's probably other couple kinds of credits you got for not making a whole lot of dough, if you add about the difference in state tax you now have to pay, and if you take if you were getting any help from the government on insurance that you're now not getting, I'm going to say you're an absolute net loser. Not to mention the inflation rate. So you think you've kept pace? I think you're a massive net loser.
Yeah, because you're bumped up into that higher tax bracket.
Just like you were in the 70s, when everybody started to get raises, and you know
when there were like 7 or 8 tax brackets.
Oh,
yeah.
there were
more than that.
I'm
going
to say there were 15, 20.
Wow.
I mean, I remember doing people's taxes where if you made 15.5, you paid like 8%. Now, when I say you paid, the rate was there, but you had all kinds of different deductions. There was a million different deductions. You had to deduct all your sales tax and all this kind of stuff. So, say if your adjusted is now 15 grand, 15.5, you paid like 8% plus 10% of the difference between 15 and 15.5. Then if you got to 16.5, you paid X plus 11% of the difference from 16 to 17.2 or something. So if you started that era, 76 as a worker, say at Pullman, and you got cost of living raises all the way, well, first of all, you probably didn't get 100%. You might have got 80% of cost of living. But if you did that, now instead of your tax rate, you could have been up to like 22, 23, where you started out before at like 12. That's how quick it went up. So you were never even. The government kept getting a bigger and bigger slice. Plus, you and I rag about car prices. All right, so if you and I went and bought, I have the thing up here still. I'll find the number here if I'm going to out-peep here. But they changed this whole thing. They took some good stuff off this sale. I'm pissed off at these guys. Because they must be looking to curry favor with Trump. They got all kinds of stuff on here about how much he's saving with Doge and everything. They used to have a median.
Is that the debt calculator website?
No, this is average new car in 2000 was 22 grand, right? So now the average new car is 48. Well, by my simple math, the tax rate in Illinois is say 10, might be 9.5. I paid them $2,200. Now I'm paying them $4,800.
Yeah.
Well, that's a difference, right? It's still a friggin' car, right?
Yep.
I mean,
that's how it works. That's kind of why I'm in favor of maybe a VAT. My mother-in-law, who's a progressive Democrat from New York City, she's actually telling me that she's in favor of Forbes's flat tax. And I go, Mom, wow, that's pretty conservative of you.
I think you need. We have most of our taxes are regressive. We don't need another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in terms of the VAT, what I need to do is drive.
I mean, replace all taxes, all federal taxes, with a VAT.
What I would do is I'd like to drive.
I'm warming up to that.
I'd have to drive somewhere with you and my brother, because I have to put you two in the back seat. because you both agree on that, and I absolutely can't disagree more, because the problem with our tax system, I think, actually was designed to be pretty fair, yet everybody who's anybody's gotten a nick out of the thing for them, if you're big enough. And you guys, how can I say this nicely? I can't. You guys can't be naive enough to agree that when the VAT tax is finally done, it's not going to be the two pages you guys think it's going to be.
It's going to be
the same 2,000 pages, and everybody. You know, I say that now,
at the big beautiful bill. It's not a big beautiful bill. It's the big beautiful deal for everybody, right?
Well,
everybody gets their scrape off.
You know, why I say that because I'm older than the Bodie is, you and my brother, and I was around for Nixon's wage and price controls. Now, what could be simpler? Nobody gets a raise and no prices go up. This thing had to be a gazillion pages long. I pull up to the gas station, and guess what? Last week it was $1.10 and now it's $1.20. And I go, wait a minute. Don't we have these things called? No, because if the wholesale price to you gets more, you get to add something to it. It was so complicated that the people who really knew how to read it and raise prices, the only people that got screwed, it was very easy to say, oh, no, you don't get a raise. We got the only people that...
Let me qualify my support for the VAT tax. If the legislation fills up a postcard and it's a 20% VAT and all other federal taxes are repealed, I'd be 100% in favor.
Okay, and I would say if your aunt had a mustache...
And a supermajority is required to change it, I would be in favor of it.
I'm going to say if your aunt had a mustache, you'd be your Uncle Ned.
And that's never going to happen. That will never happen.
What's the other crazy one? If the queen had balls, she'd be king? You know, something. Anyway, on that happy note, always good stuff, Al. Let's hope we do get some kind of a thing with China. We could drop some of these supposedly, the loadings in L.A. have dropped like a...
We look at layoff announcements, it's kind of scary. So,
yeah. We don't need that. SP Futures up 7, NASDAQ Futures up 30. Tomorrow, CPI, so it'll be a big day. Al, talk at you, bud. Ricky, nice job. Tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.